Welcome to Season 3, Episode 5 of the Nordic Arts Agency podcast, a podcast connecting emerging and established international artists and art influences from around the globe. I'm your host, Juliet, a British expat, art historian and gallerist based in Sweden. I created this podcast to share conversations with artists or art influencers whose artwork or insight inspires me personally. I'm joined on this podcast by my co-host, Lars Herman Hegg, a Norwegian artist, art consultant and gallery technician who joined the Nordic Art Agency early in 2022. Now, if you are a subscriber or regular listener to our gallery podcast, you'll probably know by now that we've had an incredible couple of months in the gallery with several new team members and a permanent move to our new two-floor, more centrally located gallery. This relocation has enabled us to present large-scale group exhibitions and to deliver concurrent curated solo exhibitions with the additions of our installation video rooms that truly support our artists' visions and bodies of work and give an insight directly into their practice. During this period of transition for the gallery, we have been increasingly mindful of the way in which behaviours have changed during the pandemic and periods of lockdown or social restraint. There is a residual aftermath which is definitely present and can still be felt in the way in which we interact. The reduction of spontaneous gatherings has impacted the ebb and flow of life and how we consume culture and experiences. Rethinking how we engage with art, whether digitally or in the analogue world, has been high on our agenda at the gallery. Our response to these behavioural changes has been something which inevitably becomes a major factor as to how we will exhibit and interact with our followers or collectors in the future. So together with Lars, who has a background as a practising artist and brings his experiences from the art world in London, Oslo and Malmö, all those reflections which we have gathered from the past few months have been so invaluable, and it's been important for us to continue to reevaluate how we present our artists and engage with consumers of art in lots of different ways. We're currently exhibiting a group exhibition of established and emerging local artists from Malmö in a smaller, separate gallery location, quite a departure from our normal international artist profile. How did this come about and what was the modus behind this exhibition, Lars?
Yeah, so we have this new space, which is close to the main gallery with a lot of traffic. So we thought it would be a perfect place to try out this idea we were talking about, having, you know, the lower threshold for exhibiting art. And so we decided to run on something similar to the Royal Academy summer exhibition model, where participants and artists could send in their submissions for a juried summer exhibition. The idea behind this was to include local artists. We were hoping to have a variety of different arts and practices that occurs in Malmö or the surrounding area. With the concept of the Royal Academy Summer Exhibition, we wanted to translate this into something of our own. What we were hoping to achieve with this exhibition, a small insight to the local art scene.
And it certainly is a great location in the centre of the city and has that unexpected quality that you're talking about. I really always loved going to the Royal Academy Summer Exhibition when I was living in London, and I think that's been running since 1796, and it was always an opportunity where multiple artists were exhibiting one or two pieces of work, and it was always a really thrilling exhibition to attend. So it was that kind of objective that we wanted to create. You were really fully immersed, Lars, in sourcing the artists and the curation of the exhibition. What was important when selecting the artists and the artwork to be exhibited?
So we did an open call to have artists, local artists, submit their work. And I think one of the most important things was to have a variety in both age, background and education, to, you know, an insight into practices on all level, not just the institutional, but people who've been having an art practice entire life without a formal education. For the curatorial aspect, this was quite important, and also to include a variety of mediums such as sculpture, painting, photography, textile. The artists that are participating in the exhibitions are local artists, some of them are international artists who have moved to Sweden or worked abroad for a longer period of time. And some of the artists have formal education, some of the artists have been self-taught. So I think this brings a good variety of the work that is exhibited.
The exhibition opened on June the 3rd and the curation looks fantastic. The blend of artists and balance between the works, I think, was incredibly successful, Lars. And the exhibition is an open installation. So there's no doors and no gallery attendants, just soft, comfortable leather chairs and the ability to explore the space, read the artist's biographies and information about the artworks.
The exhibition space has worked really well for, you know, the Swedish exhibition model, where people tend to be a bit put off as soon as they have to talk to anybody or make eye contact. You know, people want to... that goes for the entire Scandinavia. And, you know, often when you go into, an art exhibition or, say, a shop, you don't want to necessarily communicate. You just often go there to experience or just drop by and see what is going on. Having hovered around exhibitions for many hours on several different occasions, I do notice that people tend to drop by when they see there's nobody in there. The doors are open, as you said, and it's very inviting. A lot of people make a detour and spend a couple of minutes or in order to look at the art and read more about the artist, because everything is offered there of information. So
I think just observing how people are interacting with the space, which they're not expecting to encounter, I think that's what you wanted from the exhibition.
Exactly. And I think a lot of their reactions as well have been real good.
For me, it was a luxury to actually have all of the artists physically coming into the gallery with their works, rather than just shipping them to the gallery from various cities all over the world remotely, and to actually meet the artists face to face and talk about their work. For me also, because our artists are all exclusive to our gallery, I love the idea that these artists all have other interests outside of the Nordic Arts Agency. So there was less pressure from that perspective, and the exhibition could be slightly more experimental. We could work with real kind of mixture of diverse practices in one exhibition, which was really exciting. And the artists are obviously at the forefront of the Nordic Arts Agency Summer Exhibition. And this podcast episode is very much about their experiences as artists and reflections on their artworks. As the curator of the exhibition, Lars, I'm going to hand over to you now. You've been in discussions with the artists, and the next part of the podcast will really be them in their own words describing various elements of the exhibition and their own practices and the artworks that they chose to exhibit.
I'm joined by Mia Hultgren. Mia Hultgren is a Swedish artist and designer living and working in Malmö. She holds a master's degree in textiles from the RCA in London and a BA from the Royal Danish Academy of Fine Arts School and Design. Good to have you here, Mia. You exhibited a work in our summer exhibition called Bird's Nest. It's a hand-sewn textile work around 80 times 70 centimeters.
Yeah. So my practice is based a lot of, about material and material investigation. So I have kind of, you know, I have the material investigation going on, like hands-on in the material. And along with that, I take a lot of photos, really close up on textures, kind of everywhere I go. I stop, kind of my friends, you know, they laugh at me because I stop every step, you know, to take a picture of some close-up of some textures. So I think when I work, I have my photo bank, both on the computer, but also like in my head, because I think when I stop and take a picture, it's kind of, you know, that it sticks better than just looking at it. So I have that on one side, and then I have the material investigations. Just, it can be quite randomly, you know, just I find a interesting material and I kind of want to test it, usually test it in different techniques to see what it can do. And then those kind of, you know, connect with each other, kind of taking the texture inspiration, finding a form in the pictures and working with the material. I'm really interested also in the shape in between. I love the lichens on rocks, you know, and then you can see that pattern, but you can also see the forms in between where you actually see the stone, round shape, organic shapes. I think that's a start to it. I think it also, for me, it feels like if you have an organic shape or, you know, a swirly shape, it feels like it has no start and no end. Whereas for me, if I see a rectangle, it kind of, although it doesn't, it kind of has a beginning and an end. And I find that kind of uninteresting. So I think for me to find some kind of flow and movement, and I think that's also what literally got me interested in textile as a material, that it is a moving material, a living material that, you know, bends if you touch it. And so I think that's how the shape came around, and also being inspired about nature as well, where you find more organic shapes.
Does nature play a big part in the material as well?
I would say usually for the work for the summer exhibition, usually my work is more colorful. But I think, you know, being obsessed with texture and working with texture, I think sometimes, you know, it's also interesting to just go colorless, because then the texture gets more of a focus. So I think in between working with a lot of colors, I usually go back to working with just a single color or just white or natural colors, because I think the texture gets more, a bigger place in it. And I actually had someone to visit the exhibition that was a bit, oh, I really wanted to touch it, you know. And I think you really get that feeling when it stands out, the texture. And the choice of material for this one was just that I found it. It's a nice combination with like the soft wool and then the best yarn that is kind of, you know, rough in it. So it was more the combination of the texture.
The title for the work is Bird's Nest.
I really hate giving a work a title. I find it really stressful. So I'm thinking maybe in the future I should just get them numbers and then, you know, you don't have to think about it. But I think for this piece, it came along in the very end, to be honest. Had it up on the frame, it was all done, and I think it has some names during the process, whereas the material kind of like a dry season was something that came up to my head, because it was kind of this burnt grass kind of non-color. But so then I had it up on the frame and I looked at it and I was like, you have the long bust yarn in a shape. And then it just looked a bird nest to me. And I think it was also made in the spring, you know, when the birds kind of collect and build their nest. So I think it just came up in the end. And I'm not sure if I like the name, to be honest. But yeah, that's the title.
I think it's quite fitting. And yeah, it's also, I wouldn't, you know, necessarily think of a bird nest as soon as I, the first time I saw it, I didn't think of a bird nest. So I think it's quite fun to like have these associations as well. Remember seeing your work at Lokstallene, and it was quite hard because I was I went to a art exhibition earlier, and when I came to Lokstallene, I was all of a sudden I was allowed to touch everything, which was it's kind of weird, and you have to get used to it in a exhibition. But would you like to have people interact with the work, you know, feeling the material and the textures?
Well, I think I would prefer people to actually be allowed to interact. Working with texture, you know, that is really something that you can feel it when you touch it. But I also think it's interesting to work with it in the context of an art exhibition where you know you can't touch the art, where you actually have to feel it without touching. And that's also something that I've worked a bit with at the RCA, you know. How can you get something tactile without touching it? Do you have to use your hand to feel that something is tactile?
Yeah, and people still seem to be quite hesitant to touch a work in, you know, these settings, especially, you know, the white cube. People just assume that you can't be touching it and you have to stand 2 meters apart from the work that you're looking at. You worked internationally and you've been working in Malmö since 2019. How do you find Malmö compared to, say, London?
Well, smaller, but also moving back. I mean, I've lived in Malmö back and forward, but moving back from London, I think, and then COVID came along, so I feel like I still have a lot to experience in Malmö when it comes to the art scene in Malmö. But I think what I kind of realized in Malmö is, and I mean, Malmö is also has a population of, half of the population in Malmö is under 35. Which means it's a really young city. You can also feel that there is kind of this energetic and experimental art scene.
Do you find it nourishing for your practice?
I think it's nice, you know, when everything doesn't have to be that fancy, or, you know, you just make a pop-up exhibition if you want to, you know. That kind of feeling kind of gives a bit of a relaxed approach to it.
You have been exhibited a lot of times with other designers, but how did you find being exhibited with the local artist in the summer exhibitions?
Interesting. It was really nice meeting them and talking to them as well, and see, you know, some faces of some local artists as well. And I also think in the area where my piece was hung, I think there was a nice dialogue between some of the work. Also, fun thing with Julia Hallström Hjort's piece Sister, that was just next to mine. So I posted a picture where my piece, you could see my piece and you could see her, and then I had a friend that wrote, you know, that that neck I can recognize, I wouldn't mistaken it. And I was like, but it's not me in because she has a painting where, you know, we have a woman with brown hair, short hair from behind, and she was like, but that's you. I'm like, no, it's not me. So that was like a fun thing, but also like that painting has some calmness to it as well, whereas I think as my piece as well has some things. I think they spoke in that kind of, you know, soft, calm way. And also with Lotta Blanking's piece, Fantasy Drift, there, that also has a lot of nature screaming out of it. I think they also had a really great dialogue going on with the nature and with Trolls Orange, kind of round piece behind the deer. It kind of made me feel like a sunset, you know, this really blood red sunset. So I think there was a lot of dialogue going on between the pieces, and also a fun way of the place where the exhibition was, where you have a lot of people, you know, just passing by and big windows so they can see it, which I also find really nice. And I also think, you know, in Malmö you have, because a lot of shops, you know, closing down, and then you have these big areas with shopping windows, you know, in the high street, where they also had like pop-up art things going on. And then you do, because you give it to them instead of, you know, having them to have to come to the exhibition, you kind of just give it to them. Been really nice exhibiting at the Nordic Art Agency, and also the feedback, and also that a lot of people, you know, you could tell them like it's there, and they were like, oh yeah, I passed by several times now because I needed something in the area, you know. So I think it's, yeah, probably just that it's also a nice way of exhibiting pieces that people just stop by.
Mia Hultgren, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you.
John Atherton is a Scottish artist currently living and working in Malmö. John attended the Glasgow School of Art, where he studied graphic design. After living in London and working with a variety of things such as curating, screen printing, and artist assistance for international artists, he attended an MA in printing at the Royal College of Art in London. Thank you for joining us, John.
Hi, thank you for having me.
How do you go about finding and creating all of your materials that you use for the collage work that you make?
All of the what ultimately become abstract paintings or artworks, they all start as portraits. So the first layer in this collage process is always a portrait. A portrait which comes from what was a random discovery of, it was a group or a stack of yearbooks from the 1980s in an area of Sweden which is unknown to me, because all the covers had been removed from these yearbooks. The reason I liked this object was it was a random discovery. I almost feel like it found me. And people that I showed to at the when I first discovered it always like to look at the people in these rows of faces and kind of fabricate lives for them and narratives and so on. And also what I like about the fact that it's a yearbook is it felt like it's a commemoration of a beginning. And that's what it is for me. It's how I start every artwork, is the beginning of every work. So yeah, so that's where all of the work stems from. It then is put through a process of abstraction, the portrait being this way to kind of start on the wrong foot. And it's put through this process of abstraction using screen printed paper and collage, which is manipulated. And the pictures, the portraits themselves, are by the end almost completely gone. So yeah, that's where I find my material. It all stems from this one source.
Do you often imagine scenarios for all these different people in the yearbooks that you find?
I'm pretty sure off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure it was 1981, which roughly would put these people at about 50 now. So yeah, they have, since then, they've had lives and they have kids and they have jobs. And yeah, this is the sort of interesting thing. And as I say, anyone that I showed this these items to, and I don't really show it to people. I kind of prefer it to be this anonymous kind of background that goes on in the work. But everyone was that's what everybody did. They immediately tried to sort of fabricate these stories based on what the person looked like. And a lot of them were quite sort of cliched, you know, it's, the goth and the so on, the jock, these sort of things.
But yeah.
It was quite interesting, people's reaction.
When you keep layering the pieces in your work to form the biggest story, from a viewer's perspective, once you see it on the other side of the glass, only certain pieces of the work are visible because a lot of the, you know, prints behind it are, you know, covered. Kind of relates to, you know, a first impression that you can only see the surface area without, you know, knowing the person.
First and foremost, for me, I'm a kind of abstract painter. When I'm producing the work, I almost kind of shelve the idea, the concept of these people being out there. It's then all about sort of creating color and form and interesting relationships and the kind of things of art, if you will, or the things of abstract painting. I think that in a sense is what's most important to me is, and the relationships of maybe the characters comes after the completion of the work.
A lot is left to be uncovered by the viewer, I guess.
Yeah. I do see it as, I suppose the work is a catalyst for the kind of thoughts of the person viewing it. Yeah, it's very much, I mean, it's even the process and the sort of ripping and tearing, it's quite throwaway. You know, I try to be spontaneous about it, which sometimes is harder, which is harder than you think.
A lot of the pieces that are used in, especially a portrait of DA, which is exhibited in the summer exhibition, are pieces of paper that are screen printed, but they are already torn.
Part of the process, I do original artworks, which one of which is in the summer exhibition. However, I also like to do print editions. So what would happen, for example, is the original would be photographed. It would be then flattened and produced as an edition, maybe of 50 or whatever flat screen prints. But I always have overs, or ones that didn't work out so well. So I actually sort of fold them back into the mix again. So what you end up with, in the case of the one that's in the show, is some shadows, which are folds in the paper, but other shadows, for example, which are printed, or even down to you'll find staples in the paper, but actually printed. So it's this kind of illusionistic versus real, which I quite like. That picture that's in the summer exhibition was the first one that I did where I tried this technique. So it's sort of, for me, quite an important one. But yeah, that now has been often happening, that I kind of fold the print work back into the originals and then carry on, and then it happens again and again.
It kind of adds another layer to it, I guess, and also it's kind of interesting to see this source material being recycled and repurposed in a sense.
Yeah, I think really my work, when it boils down to it, it's all about creating layers and injecting more history and depth into the pieces. Even if the final product can be quite simple, I often do find myself, when I'm working, it's like building up to finally obliterating the whole piece, but you have to have the battle and the history going on behind the final layer. I think even if you can't see it, it still has to be there. It still enriches, even if it's an absent presence, which is, I did an exhibition called An Absent Presence, and I like that as a term. But yeah, it's all about injecting history and richness into what can be quite simple in the end.
Yeah, and I guess maybe the layering and the layers that are not seen by the viewer can sort of correlate to, you know, abstract painting, where the buildup of different paint layers are, you know, all play a part in the final results that are presented on the two-dimensional surface.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I did used to sort of glue everything down to flat, but now a lot of the pictures are really in relief, you know, so you really can see all the way through, and they're almost like sort of stage sets at times, to the point I've had some which are really quite thick and gone into plastic Perspex cases so that people can look not only at the front but through the sides. I like to sort of display, as I say, the battle that has gone on between myself and the work, and the working and reworking and tearing. And I think it was John Hoyland said, when he was making abstract paintings, that it was like a boxing match. And kind of when I'm doing it, I kind of feel a bit like that, almost like the portrait is my opponent. And it's kind of like sparring all the way up to this, you know, the final blow, which, as I mentioned, probably is obliterating a lot of what is there. But that's kind of how I sort of feel when I'm in the studio.
Yeah, I was really surprised when I saw the work in person and that the work was actually in a relic, because you can really see, you know, the fight that you're talking about and really dissect the whole narrative. I think it's such a great quality to the work, because when I first saw the picture of the work, I was imagining it being glued, like, you know, say more traditional collage work.
Yeah.
But it brings a more a whole entire new element to it, and you can really dissect it, you know, the whole history and what leads up to the, you know, final surface.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried for a while when I was at, I mean, particularly when I was at the RCA, about how do I actually take this now into being completely sculptural and freestanding. Which I've not really figured that one out yet. I suppose maybe you don't have to think about it; you just have to sort of make it. And I've started putting a lot of the work into wooden frames that I make myself. Which, I mean, obviously there's the basic thing about protecting the work. However, the reason they're in wooden frames made by myself is I'm kind of half thinking about this may be a structure which I can then use to have sculptural artwork. So I'm kind of like nudging my way along to like how this could be completely three-dimensional. It just seems like that I've always thought this is the obvious progression of how it would happen.
So you have exhibited in a lot of places in London. You're really familiar with being exhibited next to other artistic practices, whether it be strictly collage or printmaking. But more specifically on the summer exhibition, how do you find it being exhibited along with a chosen artist there?
Well, firstly, it was very nice for me because, as you mentioned, I've only just arrived in Malmo. So it was nice to sort of meet some of the other artists, one of which I was actually at the RCA together. We didn't know each other while we were there. It was a nice introduction to Malmo, and it's always interesting doing sort of group shows. I mean, I look at the picture next to me, which is your work actually, and I bring my own kind of thoughts to it, based on my own. And I view it in the abstract. I think it's very nice because you can flip between it being a representational image and abstract, especially when it sits next to mine. It kind of, mine allows you, or maybe helps, that kind of movement from one way of perceiving it to the next. So yeah, it's always interesting. It's just always interesting, and quite hit and miss, I suppose, but it's always interesting to see how other people's work sits next to yours.
Living in the vicinity of Malmö and Copenhagen for a few months now, how do you feel like it is compared to, say, London or, Glasgow?
The studio space that I have here in Malmö, I share with a woman called Reina, who runs the Open Studios. Now, that's going to be interesting for me. I think that might be an opportunity to go and see other people's work, also people to come, obviously, and see my own. So that, I think that will be a nice insight for me into like what's going on. As I say, doing the summer exhibition with you guys, that was a very nice beginning. I think the Open Studios will be interesting. And I mean, we were living up north. We were living near Herrljunga, and we moved to Malmo to have more of an art scene, and for my partner, like a theatre scene, and so on. So it comes recommended. So I suppose my answer is, well, let's see. We'll see what happens over the coming months and so on. But I'm excited to be here. I'm really excited to have a fresh start, to all be new for us. And I think we're based just outside Ørsted, although my studio is in the docks in Malmö. So I hope we have the potential for a really interesting life here. And hopefully one with some really interesting exhibitions and so on. There is a lot going on, a lot of thoughts that kind of I have with the work. I find it quite difficult to say my practice is, because it's adapting all the time. I can tell you like what it's made of, but the ideas that I'm having are constantly evolving. So it is quite difficult to talk about it. What I tend to do, like if I'm doing an exhibition, is I try to highlight one specific idea that I'm having, one just to make the exhibition a bit more coherent.
It is a really interesting practice for sure, and I can't wait to keep following you along as you keep working here in Malmö.
Well, I'm not planning on going anywhere for a long time, so that's perfect. Great.
That's great.
Thank you very much.
I'm joined by Emil Kultscher. Emil Kultscher is a Swedish artist who attended the Valen Academy of Arts as well as Umeå Academy of Fine Arts. He recently moved back from Berlin, where he was living for a couple of years, and is now living and working in Malmö. Welcome, Emil.
Thank you.
So I'm really interested to hear about your work, Stateless Fragments, which you mentioned was part of an ongoing series that works with, different symbols and elements taken out of context. Can you explain more?
Let's put it quite simple. So what I'm doing is that I'm collecting symbols from flags which contains two stateless nations, groups, and it can be temporary groups, it can be groups that no longer exist. And then basically I'm making cutouts of these symbols and collecting them. And then I try to see them as objects where they kind of lost their meaning. And then I try to put them together on canvas and in a sort of way in between a poster and a painting, I would say, and create a story on the canvas by using how these objects now, how they talk with each other, so to speak. But it's basically, I want to tell a story through stories that have so much greatness in them, greatness and content in them. But I'm removing all of that and building something else without really considering how these, for example, two contradictionary groups would act together, so to speak.
In today's society, how, you know, emotionally or historically loaded are these? Because a lot of the elements I don't recognize. Mm-hmm. Do they also have any particular meaning to you personally?
It's a hard question, but let's put it this way. That since I'm doing this on flags and I'm doing this on canvases as paintings, these are objects that would move around and where I don't have control of who sees them. And therefore, I think it's interesting because in this context, no, you probably don't recognize so many of these objects, as would I not if I wouldn't do this research to find these flags, because a lot of these groups are in societies where you and I have probably never been. And even if we would have been there, we wouldn't have known about this small group, right? So in that sense, what I'm trying to do is that I'm trying to not be didactic about it, but leave my control of trying to understand who the viewer or the audience of these works would be, and instead just make it a very superficial object idea that then maybe would have some sort of storytelling value, that where people would actually know what this symbol is from. I'm also not using symbols from, for example, Swedish movements and big movements that are not
like well known to.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm trying to avoid that because then I think that it's too loaded from the start, and then people see that this is what they recognize. Because we always try to solve the puzzle. When we see something, we get some information, and this is what with everything we do. And then our logic tries to understand what is it that I'm seeing and why is this made, when we talk about artwork then. And here I think that intentionally trying to let people not recognize these symbols, because they immediately say, people who see these paintings, that I recognize that that's from a video game or something. And then I'm like, no, it's not. And then they show me that thing from the video game, and it's quite similar, but it's not that. But it's because we collect these, of course, images that look similar.
Once you remove them from the context and the history of them, what do they mean to you personally?
I have to put it this way, that the way I see it, I used to make art which was within the field of relational aesthetics, or very didactic art, trying to understand my audience and trying to tell them something, or think that my idea of something was worth telling them about. And then after some years, I realized that this is not a way to communicate, because this is a one-way communication which will probably be misunderstood also, because we don't have the same brain or language, or they only see this piece at this particular time or so. So I would say that instead of continue working like that, I decided to go like the opposite way. Therefore, not think about political questions, but work with something that could be seen as a political theme. So in that, I see when I remove one of these objects, or I loan it, let's say I loan it, then I, of course, I know the story. Okay, so this symbol is from this particular group, but I try to remove that information from myself as quick as possible, see them as pure aesthetic objects. And that's what I mean with saying that it is a superficial attack when I work, but at the same time it's a choice making, because I want to see how this, like, instead of being didactic, trusting that I can have no control over the audience.
Has it changed the way you see signs and symbols now after working with the series?
I work with symbols a lot before as well, and I think it's interesting. I want to take an example, because if you are part of a group, let's say you're part of a neo-fascist group here in Sweden, like Nordiska motståndsrörelsen, and they have this symbol from runa, which is called the Tyruna, and that symbol is not forbidden, and they can march with that symbol, and that's fine for the Swedish in the matter of the law. But everyone, I guess, most people at least, feel frightened when they see these people with this symbol. And then we can talk about if you then would have that symbol in a totally different context. Say you're with a group of people who are very interested in foreign Nordic history, and when we use these symbols as the language, then it's like, I always want to see stuff, including them symbols, within the context. Because otherwise I think then you want to misunderstand what is happening, and you want to misunderstand what people want to say and what is their responsibilities and so on. So I don't think that I see... I always been interested in text, and I always been interested in communication in general. And I do think a lot about these things all the time, but I don't think this project in particular has made me look for something more. Because I think that this is one project, this is not my whole art practice. So therefore, I'm not focused on... When I work with this, I'm focused on it. When I work with another project, I'm focused on that. So yeah, I wouldn't say that I am not this project. This is just a project of mine.
Well, was it any specific event or happening that made you go down this path to exploring symbols?
Actually, it was. So I was working for a French artist a couple of years ago in Brussels, Pierre Bismuth, and he was then doing a project for Art Basel, and this was a few years after the big migration wave of 2015, right? Since then, I think that the debate has been a lot about putting people in different groups and so on. So I think during that period, I think I got more interested also in why are we obsessed with labeling stuff. When we are doing that, we also contradict ourselves sometimes. That one day one thing is fine, and the next day this thing is not fine. And then I think, why? And that's weird. And so during that time, I was, of course, focused because I was working with him on this project. And then I was more interested in, what defines a group? And started to think about it. Since I'm, for example, a football supporter, then I'm used to some certain flags, for example. And then I started to think, what is it that truly defines groups? Because the first thing that everyone can agree on is that we are different nations, we are different countries. And that's my point of taking back to the migration wave in 2015, because then it was so clear for people in Europe that we are different countries.
So you've been featured in several group exhibitions earlier. I don't know if you have exhibited any of the stateless fragments before.
No.
Okay. So having that exhibited in a group exhibitions, how do you think it works along with completely different works?
I have no idea. Because Like I said in the beginning of this conversation, I can have a clue who visits the exhibition, but I can also have a clue of, you know, who might just coincidentally walk by and stuff like that. But I don't. But since I don't know who the audience is, and since I don't want to even think about it, let's not try to think about it, and let's just, I don't know, maybe a bit more like hippie view in that sense.
See what happens.
Yeah, exactly. And but also, like, I think this was an open call without any like subject, and therefore you know that you will be like, you're not invited to show something on a specific theme, for example.
So it's more like an aesthetic level.
Yeah, exactly.
But on the aesthetic level, do you find that enhances the work in some ways, or, you know, takes something away from it? Because I think it is a work that demands a lot of attention. So do you think it suffers being exhibited next to other, or does it enhance the work and the work itself or other works?
Mm-hmm. I think it's an interesting question. It's really hard to answer it, because when I make solo exhibitions, then I can control how I want, because I know how people would walk into the room, for example, which work would be next to the other, and also then it's easy, like, to kill your darlings and stuff like that, right? In this context, I think that I know myself when I go to see an exhibition, I used to read all the material before, but then I decided I'm going to stop doing that and just sort of grasp what I see.
Mm.
And then I also don't give attention to everything anymore, because if there is stuff that I immediately don't find interesting in any sort of way, then I skip that. And then I put instead extra effort or focus to read about what I am interested in. I don't know how people in general are. Like, therefore, it's so hard to answer it.
So you've been living in Berlin for 2 years.
Two and a half years.
2.5 years. So you haven't lived in Malmö before.
No.
No. How do you find the art scene? You obviously being quite fresh still to living in Malmö. But how do you find it so far compared to, say, like Berlin or Gothenburg?
Yeah, I can compare it. Berlin is hard to compare to, because I lived there for 2.5 years. I had two different studios, like one for 1 year, 1 for 1 year. And after I got the first studio, a couple of months after that, Corona happened. So, which is also part of the reason why we decided to move to Sweden in the end. So we lived in Berlin for 2 years with Corona. And therefore, I can't really say anything about how it could have been.
Yeah.
Like, I had a studio where there were, was it like 60 studios, and the second place I was almost maybe 100 studios. But people didn't meet, or when people met, it was shortly with the mask on in the corridor. So therefore, it's hard to say. What I do realize here in Malmö is that it's a small city. So if you would go to most openings, you would manage to do so in, you know, a day, or go see all galleries in one day. And you would also meet some similar people at some galleries. But when it comes to, like, studio complexes and stuff like that, I realized there are pretty many studios. And I recently got a studio in one of the complexes here. So I'm looking forward to that and to meet some other people. But I also have friends who lived here for some years who then haven't met like other artists in the same age, and maybe who graduated same year but from different art academy in Sweden, and who have never met. So it's a bit weird. Like, I thought it would be a little bit more, I wouldn't say tight art community, but that people would be a bit more knowing of each other, so to speak. But my idea of the art world, which I have been in, is that people are rarely super interested in other artists. And then other things come, you know, in between. You go to a studio to work, but it's super hard for me to say anything since I lived here for less than a year.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
I'm joined by Danish artist Anna Gammelgaard, who works with installations and sculptures that mainly embodies non-recognizable forms. She's currently living in Copenhagen and has studied at the University of Arts in Bergen and recently graduated from the MA in Malmö. Welcome, Anna. The work that is currently exhibited in the summer exhibitions, there's a lot of bodily reactions, seduction, disruption to affect the view on sort of more primal plane, seeing it more as a like biological human body. I would like to know if you can talk more about it, creating it, and your relation to it.
When I talk about wanting the piece to be seductive and disruptive, it is a way of saying that I wish that my art can activate multiple reactions in the viewer. Also reactions that might go against each other. And mostly I just wish for the viewer to feel something. And for that, I have to seduce them in a way. It is, in general, a fact that when we're put into a situation, our body immediately acts on the situation, whether it's aware of it or not. And those reactions activate some emotions. And after that, we can rationally conclude something. So we start thinking about our reaction and putting it into words. And I guess that's what you can call contextualizing also. But what I wish for my art, and also how I approach art in general, is this being aware of my body's reaction to a piece. And it activating some emotions, and just let them be there. Let me have that experience without rationalizing it or contextualizing it. Not to think so much and just feel. That also goes to my process of working with art.
When you start a new piece or when you start working on a project, do you set out with a feeling or something in mind that you wish to convey to the audience?
I would say in general, if I should define my process, it is spontaneous, defined as unforced or unrehearsed and unplanned. I paint in a way where I try to not have control, and I don't have this set motive or this specific idea beforehand, also not necessarily relating to emotions. I think my emotions can be, you can see them in the images.
Is it more about the process, this sort of like this automated construction of the work?
Also, it is like with this painting, I work with ink that moves very freely and it cannot be corrected or changed afterwards. So I think the medium also naturally forced me to let go of some of this control. And I try to let my body speak in this process, in also in the way my hand moves. But again, it is, and it's need to control. So there is this space for my body and the material to work together. And that's what I mean when I feel like the process relates to the other things we talked about. Whether I'm aware or not, or whether the viewer should, you know, not interpret the piece. Like in my process, after I've been in, I don't even know if it's a state. It's just, I mean, the way that I'm working. And after that, I very consciously decide whether, you know, the piece is good or bad, or whether I should continue it. And I think that decision, of course, is based on some knowledge of aesthetics
that are kind of stored in my brain after so much art exposure. When I approach art, I am also very aware of this immediate reaction my body has to a piece. And that reaction is also important for me even when the viewer approach my art piece. But I mean, again, I cannot decide how people see it.
Is it important for you to sort of reach this state of mind where you are, I guess you can say, disconnected from contextualizing the work and just, you know, moving freely amongst the paper?
I think it happens very naturally when I work. And I in that way, I think it is important. It's other artists have other processes, of course. I don't think I would be able to make what I do if I thought too much about it. Normally, when I do, like sometimes I would have an idea before, maybe a shape or so, and those ones actually end up not being as great. So the further away I can get from this control, that is when I reach the best results. In this case, it was with ink and of course water that are they react in a very uncontrolled way. So it gave me a lot.
How did you end up or discover rice paper and ink?
I was working with another piece before Corona in the school, and I was working with ink in the way that I was writing, because I like when you're writing in ink, you can see the movement, you can see when you dip the pen, it will sort of create this really great tempo in a way. And I think that was very interesting. And then during Corona, I just basically had the material in my apartment. I was working from home in Copenhagen, in my apartment. And then I just started, and then it kind of worked from there. A process also developed over time. I talked about this piece being a part of an installation. And that was made during a whole year with one painting taking over the other painting and one technique also be affected by a new technique in a way. So for example, when people ask me how long did it take to make this painting, in a way you can say that all the paintings that took it, like all the paintings would take a year because it is this big research with material in a way. When things work, you just know it works, and then you should just go with it. I have worked with so many materials in my artistic practice. I always go from one material to another. I have made sculpture in plaster and wood, a lot of different materials. And I think also constantly starting on a new way of working also correspond with this idea that everything is fresh and new, and I don't know any rules about how to work with the material. So in that way, I can also disconnect from, you know, disconnect my brain in a way, because I don't have any pre-knowledge that I...
For your degree show at your MA in Malmö, you did a installation that featured a lot of your work on rice paper and paper with ink. Seeing that compared to a group show, how do you think that affected the work, you know, seeing as it's taken out of your context and put into an exhibition that features a variety of different practices? Do you think it enhances the work or brings new elements to it?
It is or was really good for me to see this painting in a group context. It is now very heavily defining it as one picture, kind of framing it. Compared to the installation, now I'm forced to really cut to the bone, choose an image. And it became for me an entirely other piece. Instead of going into an installation room, I find myself now being able to, or having the space to immerse myself further into this picture and seeing all its layers, and being a part of this abstract space in a more focused way. So it has been a really great experience and also a knowledge that I can take with me. And I think even though we all have different artistic expressions in this group, it is installed in a way that gives space for all voices, artistic voices. And it is always fun to see how your own piece can be affected and affect other pieces around it. The art scene today is free and open to different artistic experimentation. And there are a lot of different directions to go when it comes to expression. And maybe exactly therefore, it was so important for me to not let myself be pushed or led in one direction or the other. But I am a new artist. So it is a little overwhelming because there are so many strong voices. And that is good. That is very important that the arts today and in general, really, that we're working towards creating a world or society where everyone gets a chance to speak, and letting everyone have a voice.
Thank you so much, Anna, for joining us. Troels Aagaard is a Danish artist living and working in Copenhagen. Back in 2004, Troels graduated from the Royal Art Academy in Copenhagen. Troels works in the intersection between art and design. No matter the media, he always seeks a purified form of beauty dominated by order, simplicity, and harmony. Thank you so much for joining us, Troels.
I like the fact that you refer to purism and to my artist statement. Purism was founded by a French painter, Oostenfant, and the architect Le Corbusier just after World War I. And that was like a response to the leading art at the time, which was Cubism. So they came up with something new, like back to basics painting. And if you look at Cubism just after World War I, you see there's a lot of tricks and gimmicks and stuff going on. It's almost kitschy stuff. So Oostenfant and Le Corbusier wanted to get away from all of that to have a more simple, you could say not so pleasing kind of imagery. That's actually something I can relate to. At first, I always avoid using gimmicks or some sort of painterly tricks in my work. But these two guys, they founded Purism. And the funny thing is, I just came back from France where I saw, as the first thing with my family, I saw Le Corbusier's two world-famous architecture pieces. The one is a chapel in a small town called Ronchamps in France, and the other one near Saint-Étienne is a cultural center. So I've been looking on a lot of architecture from Le Corbusier and his way of using space and using the cheapest material ever, which is concrete, and making beautiful spaces out of, you could say, the cheapest thing is just something that is tempting to me. But to get back to the laws of beauty and my artist statement, beauty is actually changing over time. It's almost like a form of fashion. Laws of beauty is also like a very much a cultural thing. But then essential form, as I speak about, I think, in my artist statement too, might be eternal. But I'm not sure. Maybe if you ask me in 100 years, I'll know. to start off, I would say beauty is not my motor or energy or way of running. I'd rather say that curiosity is actually my motor.
Your paintings are quite sculptural.
Big difference between normal rectangular paintings and then, like I make shaped canvases. You know, regular paintings you look into, like your television or like looking out a window, whereas shaped canvases, they take up space in the room in front of you. They're together with you. They inhabit the architecture and make a much bigger impact, in my view. They are objects and not just flat surfaces on a wall. And this objecthood is actually my point of my interest. Normally, I just, in my process, I start doodling, doing sketches on just paper or a napkin or wherever I am. It doesn't look like anything you would expect seeing as sculpture or painting. So my process is quite tedious, I would say, and long, because after the small doodling, I go on to computer to do a more like fixed drawing or form, which I then take to the wood workshop and carve out either with my router or jigsaw. And the process is quite long, and therefore I have, I think, time to really think about what the form should do and not do, and what the form does to the human body, what the form does to the room it should hang in. And I think this slowness that I actually have in my process keeps me renewing my form, or keeps me clear on where to go with my paintings. After the frame is finished in the wood shop, I stretch unprimed canvas onto it. It's easier to stretch unprimed than primed onto a convex or concave form. And then I prime the canvas, and then I'm ready to paint. So the biggest part of my process is actually, you could say, sculpting the frame or sculpting the media that I'm supposed to paint onto.
Is your process of making paintings or other work, is it often interrupted, or do you often make the work in one sitting? Or
it's almost always interrupted, because the frame takes me maybe half a day to do or something, and then the stretching another half day. So, and then I have to go home and sleep and see my family, and you know, so it's normally like done in several takes, and I have like old sketches lying that I try to make as like shaped form, and then they reveal themselves as not being strong enough maybe, and then I have to go back to the sketch, and well, it's like a back and forth all the time, and it takes a while. And normally I have like, I would say, two or three going at a time. When I first started as an artist, I looked at figurative painters, and I was among figurative painters in my first shared studio. So it seemed some way natural to start that way. I mean, you do what your peers around you do. But you know, it's like when a child is trying to draw, and they try to draw what they see and what they see other children draw, as I did with my colleagues in the first studio. And then later, when the child gets older, he realizes that his drawing is nowhere near the perfect representation of the world that he's trying to draw. So instead of giving up art, I actually switched to abstraction, tried to like be part of this new, completely new kind of language. You know, when you start doing art, you try to justify what you do all the time. In your attempt to justify doing art, for me, it was easier to justify telling a story than just doing abstraction, actually. Seeing that painting could be just be about color and form, and not telling a story, but actually pointing towards the viewer's body instead of telling stories. That was like a huge thing when I found out about that.
You already had quite a few solo shows and group exhibitions. I'm curious to find out how you found it being exhibited among the various artists in the summer exhibition.
I've been looking at the pictures from your website and on the Instagram, because I was only there just for, you know, a few hours at the opening. It's actually hard for me to say, not standing in front of the pieces, just seeing it on the photos. It was a beautiful, like a very airy hanging, I think. I like the info signs as well underneath each work. And that fed my curiosity even more, actually. So looking at the fellow artists' pieces, of course, started my curiosity. But the signs and the way you put it up at the show actually gave me even more curiosity. I mean, the show was actually about that, I think, trying to put out curiosity to Malmö citizens, I guess, and having them look one extra time. There's a really important thing going on in Copenhagen. I don't know if it's that big a thing in Malmö, but there are close to like 100 artist-run exhibition spaces just in greater Copenhagen. Projects room or experimental stuff going on in art places. Most of these things are non-profit and like non-institutional stuff. And that's actually the biggest thing in Copenhagen right now, that people set up their own exhibition platform and do what they need to do. I have actually a small solo show coming up in one of these artist-run spaces. The show is in Kunstvinduet in Copenhagen. It's opening October 2nd. And this is a very small space. It's a 2 by 2 by 2 meters all in all. And you can't go into the room. It's you can just look in through a big glass door. So that's really like something different to me, to not being able to walk around the pieces, but only to look at them from afar.
We will be including a link to Troll's upcoming show in Copenhagen, which you can find in our show notes. Thank you for joining us, Troll's.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you to Mia, John, Emil, Anne, and Troll's for participating and contributing to the podcast. It was incredibly interesting to hear about their artist practice in more detail, but also an insight into the art scene here in Malmö in Copenhagen. All 11 artists who are currently exhibited as part of the Nordic Arts Agency Summer Exhibition have their work on display until August the 21st. You can also view the work online and purchase it by visiting the Nordic Arts Agency website, and I'll put a link in the show notes to that. You can visit the exhibition. It can be found about 50 metres to the right-hand side of the Nordic Arts Agency Gallery on the first floor at Hansa. And you can always drop by or contact the gallery for a tour of the exhibition with Lars or I, and I'll leave a link to how to get in touch with us in the show notes. We're really interested in making this space one that is synonymous with local talent and to have future collaborative solo or group exhibitions. If you have any ideas about that, we'd also love to hear from you. Thank you for joining us. Until next time, bye-bye.